I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. He's been in a lot of headlines lately. At the beginning of last month, he rode a parade route with a replica of a machine gun mounted on his Jeep. A few weeks ago, a federal judge struck down voter ID laws that he personally defended and ordered him to take additional continuing legal education. The Kansas Secretary of State has been busy. He's also a top Republican candidate in the race for Kansas governor. Today, we'll ask Chris Kobach where he stands on key issues facing the state. Then, the summer is the hottest time for music in Kansas City. We're joined by our music junkies who have the scoop on the shows and concerts you do not want to miss this year. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. And now our final conversation with the leading candidates for Kansas governor. Secretary of State Chris Kobach is regarded as one of the two frontrunners for the GOP nomination, offering a style of leadership not unlike another leading Republican named Donald Trump. Kobach is known for his controversial positions on immigration and voter fraud. We hope to focus most of our time with him today on what he'd like to do as governor. Mr. Secretary, welcome to Up to Date. Nice to have you.
Great to be with you.
Let's turn to some recent news in the governor's race, Chris. Over the weekend, there was the straw poll in Olathe. Your chief rival for the Republican nomination, Governor Jeff Collier, won it with 53% of the vote. You accused him of rigging the outcome by prepaying, that's your word, for 106 people to vote. Explain what happened there.
Yeah, so these straw polls are big picnics, and usually it's just party activists show up and, you know, people who are interested in stuff in Republican Party. This one was the Olathe Republican Party. But he asked members of his administration to drive there from Topeka and bring their families so they could vote. And then they had a list of 106 people that they – and to vote, you pay a dollar and it raises money for the local party.
Sure.
And they – His campaign prepaid $106 for 106 people on their list to vote. So it was kind of a rigging is maybe the wrong term.
But did he cheat?
Well, it's not really cheating, but it's kind of you bus in your voters and you pay for their votes just to show that you have sort of a fake majority. But, you know, all the other straw polls where that hasn't occurred, my campaign's won handily. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that the base of the party is behind me, and I'm happy with that.
Let's turn to some issues here, and arguably one of the most significant issues before the state is education. The last two sessions, the legislature appropriated more money for schools, you know, some $300 million a year ago, $525 million on top of that a few weeks ago. This is all in response to the state Supreme Court. As governor, would you have vetoed those appropriations?
Yeah, I would have vetoed the one this past year that Collier signed. The $500 million-plus increase in spending was way more than was justified. You know, we've been spending so much money, increasing again and again, often in response to Supreme Court rulings. We have doubled. In the past 20 years, we have doubled, if you take all spending sources combined, state, federal, local. We've gone from $3 billion to $6 billion, rounding, from 1998 to 2000, from 2017 was the latest number I used.
And the courts and a Republican hired consultant say that wasn't enough money.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is they keep focusing on the bottom line, the total dollars spent in the K-12 education system. What I've been saying is, why are we looking at that number? That number includes all kinds of things like, you know, new football fields, new buildings, and things like that. Let's look at dollars spent in the classroom. And if you look at dollars spent in the classroom, on average, it's about 54% of the money is actually going into the classroom. By classroom, I mean teacher salaries, I mean books, I mean computers for the kids, I mean actual instructional materials. And so what I would like to do is kind of change the focus if I'm governor and say I would like a hard requirement of 75 cents of every dollar goes into the classroom. That would actually make sure that the money goes somewhere it's going to make a difference. Look, you build a nice new football stadium, that might be great for the football team and for the students and fans, but that does not affect anyone's test scores, does not improve their education in any meaningful way.
So what's the path forward in a Kobach administration? You veto that $525 million. The court comes out and says, okay, you're out of compliance with what our order is. We're going to shut down schools this fall.
Well, but I would say we maybe – we veto the 525, but then I'd say to the legislature, okay, why don't you come up with something that shifts more money into the, or requires that more money go into the actual classroom? Then hand that to the court and say, okay, we've actually increased the money in the classroom. The total dollar amount isn't what you want to see, but how can you, justices, who, by the way, are completely out of your judicial boundaries anyway by appropriating funds and telling the legislature how much to appropriate, how can you say that spending more money in the classroom is not going to be better for the students, but you'd rather have it spent on fancy administrative buildings like the Taj Mahal that Shawnee Mission School District has?
But, you know, that consultant that Republican lawmakers just hired came out and said that the schools in Kansas are among the most efficient they had ever studied. They say that Kansas schools were producing at nearly 96% of their potential cost efficiency on average, whatever that means. One of the consultants said Kansas schools made remarkably good use of resources. The other consultant said Kansas schools were operating at an efficiency level that neither he nor the other consultant had ever seen anywhere. Pretty strong words.
Well, pretty general words, though, wouldn't you agree? Words that don't have a lot of specifics. Now, let me give you some specifics.
But they studied it.
Well, but let me give you some numbers that they may or may not have looked at. Over the past 25 years, from 1993 to the present, the number of classroom teachers in Kansas schools has only gone up 16%. But over the same period, the number of administrators and managers has gone up 38%. So the money is going toward administrators. And I think taxpayers need to know that. We're not increasing the number of teachers a sizable amount. And so you might have some consultant who, by the way, came to remarkably similar conclusions analyzing another state. It looks like they were just taking a cookie cutter report, getting paid very well to do this report from multiple states. That's what I see happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there's real waste. And then there's another problem, too. The unencumbered funds. These are bank accounts that each school district has. These unencumbered funds accounts, your money is just parked there and there's no purpose that it is allocated to. We now have about $1 billion in unencumbered funds in the various school districts' bank accounts. Wichita School District has $100 million in its one. Blue Valley, if I remember the number right, is about $45 million. This is money that's unspoken for. In other words, they got the money.
But every large enterprise always has sort of a rainy day fund, has money
right.
set aside
and
in case trouble hits.
Right, correct. But rainy day funds are normally for government entities supposed to be about 5% of annual operating budget. In some of these school districts, it's over 40%. So they can use their excuse, oh, it's just our rainy day fund. But your rainy day fund is 8 times bigger than what it normally should be. That suggests very strongly that that money is being thrown at the district, and the district either doesn't know what to do with it or doesn't have a clear plan for how that can improve the educational outcomes of the district. So I am very skeptical of these expert reports that come out and say in generalized terms, oh, we're super efficient in Kansas. I want to see the numbers, and the numbers do not say that.
If we're top-heavy with administrators, if we take your numbers here, is it time then to reduce the number of school districts across the state, consolidate districts? As you know, that's an incredibly controversial proposal out in rural Kansas. Under a Chris Kobach administration, are we going to go there?
Well, first of all, you said if we are top heavy, then do we consolidate? I don't think that the conditional statement you just made is correct. There's no reason why consolidating is necessary to reduce the number of administrators. You could have a significant reduction in the administrative expenses of districts without consolidating.
But some counties, as you know, have 6 or 7, 8 school districts inside.
So I believe we can achieve the benefits of consolidation without consolidating. In other words, you can do things like the IT resources of districts across. You can have a central IT department that is shared by school districts. So I think we can put funds together and departments combined in a way without actually eliminating school districts. That's my preferred approach.
I mean, Governor Brownback, other Republican leaders particularly, maybe even Democrats, Chris, have talked about doing exactly the same thing. And yet here we are in 2018 still having this conversation. It's easy to say. It seems to be tough to pull off.
You know, I think a lot of it, though, is the failure of leadership in the governor's office. During the Brownback and Collier administrations, you had very passive gubernatorial leadership. They would be asked by reporters like you, hey, what's your plan for X? What's your plan for Y? And they would say, well, we'll just see. The legislature's talking about it. We'll look at the bill when it comes to our desk. That is passive leadership. My style is going to be different. I'm going to say, here's what I'd like to see in the bill. If it includes this or that, I'm going to veto it. And, you know, we haven't seen that kind of leadership in the Kansas governor's office for a long time. You would expect to see that when you have a Republican governor. Now, when we have a Democrat governor with Republican majorities in the legislature, then you can't, you know, you can't have the governor sort of directing traffic in the legislature. But I'd like to try a more positive affirmative leadership.
In what ways would a Governor Kris Kobach resemble the presidency of President Donald Trump? Are we going to see the same sort of style?
You know, in, I suppose in some ways, one of the similarities is that President Trump doesn't blanch when he receives criticism. He doesn't back down. That has been my style in office for the past 8 years as Secretary of State. I think most people would agree.
I've noticed.
So we have that similarity. I don't tweet, so we have that dissimilarity. But yeah, there is a similar kind of, look, I'm going to tell you what I think. I'm not going to back down. And if you want to argue in on a radio show or in a newspaper series of columns, I'm happy to join the debate. And so there are some similarities there.
Kris Kobach, the Republican candidate for Kansas governor, is my guest. Your feeling then is that the state Supreme Court is going way beyond its authority here, and you favor this constitutional amendment that would say courts, you no longer have a say when it comes to spending on public schools across the state of Kansas.
Absolutely. I would favor that amendment and push for it. Look, the Constitution of Kansas, like most state constitutions, says that only the legislature has the authority to appropriate money. The Kansas Supreme Court has gotten into the business, and in this latest decision, they're even talking about, well, you didn't calculate the inflation rates here when you calculated that number. They sound like a legislative committee. They don't sound like a court. And so they're outside of their lane. They need to get back in their lane and review for the constitutionality various provisions of state law. But the other thing that the Kansas Supreme Court has done is they have twisted the word suitable grossly out of context. Article 6 of the Kansas Constitution says the legislature shall make suitable provision for the funding of the educational interests of the state. That just means, and then the next sentence says, and nobody will be charged tuition to attend a public school. That just says, come up with a way of funding schools. It does not say spend an adequate amount on each child's education to ensure excellent outcomes.
You know,
but that's what the Supreme Court of Kansas has twisted the words, taken the word suitable out of context. And so it's a bad decision. It's a series of bad decisions, and
well,
they're outside of their
bad
role.
Decisions all the time,
right.
And yet you don't remove courts, their jurisdiction, their right to review a certain area of law. Are there other parts of state government you would say the court has no business being rendering judgments in too?
So this is not a jurisdiction limiting statute or constitutional amendment. This is an amendment that just says to the judiciary, in case you didn't get it where it says elsewhere in the Kansas Constitution, appropriating and dictating amount of money to be spent in schools is not within the judicial power. So this is, you know, jurisdiction limiting statutes are like, okay, the court shall not have jurisdiction over abortion, or you name a specific topic of a case.
Mm-hmm.
This is just basic constitutional law that the Kansas Supreme Court is ignoring.
Let's move on to a different issue. Where do you want to take the state when it comes to gun laws in Kansas, Kris? What's your plan there?
Well, I think the state of Kansas is a very gun friendly state. In our citizenry, there's a strong gun culture in Kansas. I'd like to see Kansas be number one in terms of protecting the rights of law abiding gun owners to keep and bear arms. We saw
what needs to happen to get us there.
Well, for the Brownback Collier administration took us a step backward last year when they restricted concealed carry rights in medical facilities, and then, of course, ironically or coincidentally, I should say, right after that bill became law, there was a Bronx hospital shooter like within a week after it became law in Kansas. You know, there's nothing magical about a plastic sign that says no guns allowed when it's put on the side of a medical building. And indeed, many people who work in these facilities say they need to be able to protect themselves.
So concealed carry at the KU Med Center would be something you'd favor.
I would favor repealing that 2017 restriction. I think we should reduce the concealed carry age to 18. Look, when my girls go off to college, I want them to be able to protect themselves when they're walking through a dark parking lot at night, and I don't understand why they would have to wait till their senior year before they're able to protect themselves in that way.
Let's go back to the KU Med Center situation. I mean, doctors we've talked to suggest that, hey, the emergency rooms can oftentimes be a really tense place. You have people wanting to gain retribution against someone who's been shot and is in the hospital. You add guns to that mix, we're asking for gunfire in hospitals. We won't tolerate it. We can't tolerate it. What do you say to them?
Well, that hasn't happened in any of the dozens of states that do allow concealed carry in medical facilities. And it was allowed in Kansas before this latest restriction. So empirically, that argument has not proven to be true.
A few weeks ago, in a parade in Shawnee, you were standing in a Jeep next to a gun that looked like a 50 caliber machine gun. It turned out to be a replica, but there was enough of an outcry over it that the city of Shawnee actually issued an apology over this. What do you say to that? And you told me before the show today that you're going out in July 4th parades with the Jeep and the machine gun.
Yeah, it is a replica M2 machine gun, which is the iconic machine gun of the 20th century for the U.S. military. It's a Jeep, which is the iconic military vehicle of the 20th century, and it's wrapped in a vehicle wrap that has sort of the American flag on it. And the Jeep screams patriotism, right? And
it screams provocative.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, what's so provocative about the American flag? And
no, a machine gun in a parade, Chris. Come on.
Well, last time I checked, in just about every parade I've been in, and I've been in many parades, they feature men with guns. There's the color guard carrying guns. There are restored military vehicles in parades. Some parades even have big guns, like tanks, in the parades. So the idea that a parade can't have guns is just silly.
But that's the military, Chris. You're a candidate for governor of Kansas.
No, I think that having a vehicle like that. That, by the way, that Shawnee Days parade, I started down the parade route, and I thought, man, I must really be popular in Shawnee because all these people clapping and thumbs up. And then I realized they're giving the thumbs up for the vehicle. And never before has a vehicle gotten such positive reaction. As far as the outcry, I would say less than 1% of the people were giving any sort of shaking of heads or negative reaction. So you get a few people tweeting, and this is kind of the snowflake outrage. I'm offended by this, and I'm going to tweet about it. Well, the 99% to 1% ratio told me that people watching the parade loved it. And then I've had mayors from around Kansas saying, please bring it to my parade. We'd love to have it here. So I think the fake outrage of a very small number of people should not drive public policy, and it's not going to drive me. And so this is sort of a perfect vignette of how I react when I hear something that I regard as ridiculous coming from the left.
You know, your critics say you're controversial just to be controversial sometimes.
No.
You revel in it. What do you say to that?
I say, no, I just don't back down. If I believe I'm right, I'm not going to back down because somebody says they're offended. So,
but if you're governor, at what point? No, Governor Brownback thought he was right with the tax cuts, never changed course on that, and he's no longer governor of Kansas. I mean, at what point as a leader do you say, my policy is wrong, I need to refigure where I'm going?
So what Governor Brownback and now it appears Governor Collier is on the same track, the mistake he made, and I'll get back to your question, but the mistake he made on taxes is we had the tax cut in 2012, but then we had a state record in spending increase in 2013 to $6.1 billion, and then in 2015, another state record to $6.2 billion. So the spending was on the increase while the revenues were going down. He put the cart before the horse. If you're going to cut taxes, which I want to do, and that is one of my top priorities, I'm going to cut spending. That is the mistake of the Brownback administration, and the Collier administration is carrying it on with another massive spending hike. But to your question, if I believe I'm right, I won't back down. Now, if new information comes in and it truly appears that the facts on the ground have changed, then I will, I am a former professor and I will look at the data and make an adjustment. But the difference is that I just, if somebody, and quite often these debates get magnified, I'm sure your listeners, the debate over photo ID, it's overwhelmingly popular, not only with Kansans, but with Missourians as well. But to hear the outrage on the left claiming that photo ID is somehow racist, I think that is just false. And I think it is I know it's false because the Democrats in Kansas who vote, 2/3 of Democrats voted for our law that I drafted in 2011.
Jason Kander would have different stats that would suggest that the crackdown on voter rights is something else altogether.
Well, let's just talk specifics, though. Photo ID. I have seen no polling that suggests it's even remotely unpopular with any sector.
Well, I'm going to go back to what you said a minute ago about cutting spending in Kansas. Arguably, Kansas right now, we have prison unrest right now, problems with foster kids sleeping in offices because of a lack of foster homes. We got a highway fund that's been robbed of hundreds of millions of bucks. You got the state Supreme Court saying spend more on public schools. Where do you go to cut spending?
So in my years as Secretary of State, I I'll give you, you're correct on those things, although not all of those problems are a result of lack of funds. In my years as Secretary of State, I started in 2011 with a $7.0 million budget, and we cut it every single year down to $4.6 million today. So the budget has been cut by more than a third, 7 to 4.6, and every year now we're saving roughly $2.5 million for taxpayers. The way
isn't
we
there
did
some criticism that money is because you were getting federal dollars that no,
that,
no
yeah, that
getting.
Was a ridiculous argument made by Hutton, who was formerly in the race. That the federal dollars, we still have them. It's called the HAVA, Help America Vote Act grant. We still got $3 million in that bank account. We're getting another $4.4 million in this year, so we'll have $7.5 million. And he made the false argument that Kobach cut his spending because that grant money ran out. No, and that grant money is a small percentage of our budget anyway. Has no effect.
What are you going to cut in state government?
What we did is we had natural attrition. The baby boomers are retiring. 11,000 people a day nationally. 11,000 people a day are retiring. A lot of them in Kansas, a lot of them in government. When people retired in my agency, my direction to my deputies was, let's see if we can not replace them. We didn't fire people in mass numbers. We just slowly, through attrition, shrunk as an agency. I'm going to take the same approach to Kansas government statewide. We will slowly shrink the agencies through attrition. There is a lot of fat to be carved. Kansas is ranked number 3 in the country.
After the Brownback years, hasn't the fat been taken out of state government?
No, it hasn't. Government's been growing. And Kansas ranks number 3 in America in the number of state and local employees per capita. Think about that. Number 3 in America in the number of state and local government employees.
How do you restore highway funding?
Okay, I agree completely that we should not be robbing the bank of KDOT.
There's no question that happened.
There is no question. Yes, $600 million over the past 2 years has been taken out of the highway funds and has been used to spend money elsewhere. So if we can shrink government spending in these multiple agencies and trim the fat there, then we will not be needing to rob the bank of KDOT. So I think the failure to cut spending is why the legislature and the Brownback Collier administrations have been stealing money from the highway fund.
So you can cut spending enough to replace the money that's been taken out of the highway fund. That's a lot of money.
I'm sure we can do it. Yeah.
How about legalization of marijuana? For or against?
Against.
Okay. How about a medicinal use of marijuana?
I don't think we need medicinal use of marijuana. I see that we are now making advances in medicine, and I believe there are several applications for approval at the FDA right now for the, I think it's the CBDs, if I remember the acronym correctly, you can take the beneficial medicinal purposes of marijuana and put them in pill form, and that way you can get all the benefits without the recreational use.
One final point. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. A federal judge just dressed you down and ordered you to take 6 additional hours of continuing legal education that, quote, pertain to federal or Kansas civil rules of procedure or evidence. What did you make of that ruling, and have you taken the class yet?
The ruling was very unusual. I've never seen that. That's not to say it's never happened before. There were a number.
She said you messed up in the courtroom, Chris.
Well, but the interesting thing is the things she pointed to were just sort of evidentiary disputes between my attorneys and the opposing attorneys.
That you didn't know the procedures.
Well, that's the odd part. There was no demonstration that I didn't know any particular procedure, and they were things that reasonable attorneys could disagree on. So it is what it is, and obviously, when a judge issues a ruling, we follow it. But the other thing about that case too, there's been, I think, some intentional misrepresenting of what happened there by my opponents. In fact, there was a negative ad that was running that was just really ridiculous, saying Kobach lied in open court. That didn't happen. What happened was a civil contempt citation, which is used to compel a party to act, not criminal contempt, which people see in the movies and on TV.
Right.
And it had nothing to do with lying or misrepresenting in open court. It had to do with the judge directing the Secretary of State's office to direct the counties to send voters 2 notices, not 1. And counties sent the main notice. Some of the counties failed to send the second notice, but we don't control the counties. That's what the issue was about. But of course, it's been misconstrued by my opponents.
That's Chris Kobach. He's the Kansas Secretary of State. He's a front runner for the GOP nomination for Kansas governor. The primary is coming up on August 7th. Advance voting begins on July 18th.
Yes.
Mr. Secretary, thanks for coming in.
Great to be with you.
You bet. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk summertime music. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, we talked about why the Kansas Supreme Court decided the legislature's $525 million for public school funding as a boost wasn't good enough. Find out more at kcur.org/up-to-date. We're taking tomorrow off for Independence Day, but we'll be back on Thursday to ask the ethics professors about the morality of kicking White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders out of a restaurant because of her political views. That's Thursday on KCUR. KCUR's up to date. Well, summer is such a great time for music. Outdoor venues are available for live acts, and when it gets too hot, there's always a new recording to listen to while hanging out in the AC. Kansas City offers a lot to listen to this summer, so we're going to recommend some musicians you may want to hear. Our guide's KCUR contributor Bill Brownlee, who curates the Plastic Sax blog that looks at Kansas City jazz. Bill, welcome back.
Thank you, Steve.
Judy Mills is owner of the Mills Record Company at 4045 Broadway in Westport, and she starts us off this morning with a group called Shy Boys and their 1 minute and 30 second recording called Take the Doggy. Let's take a listen.
Dropped my food on the ground. Said how quickly you scarf it down. Hey bud, are you getting fed? Eat up before your real loner comes home and sees someone new.
That's the Shy Boys, and Judy, did I read that right? A 1 minute, 30 second recording? Are our attention spans getting that short out there?
This is just a fun song that's going to be on their new album, and I thought it would be a fun thing to bring today.
They're a new group, are they? Or where do they come from? Or who are they?
They've been around for a long time, and they've worked really hard in Kansas City, and I'm excited for them. This is their second full length, but it's their first full length on a national label called Polyvinyl, and they're getting a lot of press because of that exposure, and I'm really excited for them. And they're two brothers and a group of best friends that have been working for years in Kansas City.
And the group again is Shy Boys, and this album Bell House, this is out, right?
It will be out. These are all forthcoming records. Coming out on 8/3.
August 3rd.
Yes.
Okay. Bill, you're taking us on a bit of a flashback with your first pick, the band Mysterious Clouds. What sounds familiar about their music to us?
Well, anyone who got weird in the 1960s with the whole psychedelic scene will find a lot to like about Mysterious Clouds. It's a Kansas City band led by the crown prince of the area psychedelic scene, a guy named Diedrich Moore. I saw this band for the first time play at, of all places, a property owned by the Church of the Resurrection downtown on Saturday. And Diedrich Moore explained that the song we're about to hear was inspired by his practice space, which is a converted Presbyterian church where light streams through the stained glass windows, and inspired this track.
The crown prince of Kansas City psychedelic music, here it comes. This is Flying Across My Mind by Mysterious Clouds. That's Mysterious Clouds, the track Flying Across My Mind. I like that, Bill.
Yes, I do too. And that band, Mysterious Clouds, plays at Davies Uptown Ramblers Club on Saturday, July 21st.
Okay. Judy, you picked a recording from a duo I like and one that has done pretty well for itself. That's Medicine Ward and the Mama Bear. When's their next release coming out here?
Their next EP is coming out on 727 from Glassnote, who's done a great job of really giving them a national exposure.
Are they a national act now? Have they gotten that big?
I believe they are. I would say that they are.
Yeah, they tour nationally, and they're on a tour now with a band. They're opening for
somebody. I read about it. Yeah.
Lots of large bands.
Yeah, lots of large bands. Yeah. Yeah. What track did you pick for us to hear?
I brought Childhood Goodbye.
Okay, here's Childhood Goodbye from Mama Bear and Medicine Ward and the Mama Bear.
Walk this earth till this curse won't come back again. Be my road, be my home, my bad weather friend. Walk this earth till this curse won't come back again. Oh, child, good bye, childhood goodbye. I try. Colder rain, go insane, poetry's a crime. Play your song, right or wrong, sing it with a cry. Colder rain, go insane, poetry's a crime. Oh, child, goodbye, childhood, goodbye. I try.
That's Medicine Ward and the Mama Bear, and that's really good. That's why they're national, right?
Yes, just absolutely. Good. And if you want to catch them locally, I should mention they're going to be at the New Madrid here on September 25th.
And they're harder to catch locally than they used
yes,
to be,
yes, absolutely.
Right?
I remember when they played in my little store and just packed it out on Record Store Day 2 years ago. Like, they just bring families together.
That's amazing. But it's working.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, it's hot outside. Too hot. How about some hot music here?
Yes. Cubanisms is a Kansas City ensemble led by a guy named Michael McClintock that plays the music of Cuba. And they formed 2 years ago. They're playing Saturday at Record Bar, which serves as a record release party for their new album, Acento Cubano. And this is an authentic Cuban folk music band that, you know, has elements of salsa, but mostly it's a traditional Cuban music group.
Cubanisms, that's the name of the group, right?
Correct.
Let's listen to them. That's Cubanisms. I want to run this by you again, Bill. That's a local Cuban folk music group
It sounds awfully authentic to me.
Yeah, and there's good reason for that. Michael McClintock has spent a lot of time in Cuba. In fact, that's where he met his wife. She was actually the tour guide on his first tour of Cuba, and they fell in love. He courted her for months in Cuba. They decided to marry and return. He's from Neosho, Missouri, but so they came here to Kansas City so they can concentrate on playing this authentic Cuban music.
I was going to say, it's got to say something about Kansas City that a group like this comes now from our town.
Yeah, and there's it's not just Michael. There are lots of musicians that you hear here that have studied this music and are as perhaps as good as anyone in the world.
And just listening to them, it sounds like they'd be a really fun act to see live.
Oh, yeah, and it's a dance band. There will be dancers at the Record Bar on Saturday. And the Record Bar is, incidentally, air-conditioned, so you can dance and be comfortable.
Again, that group is Cubanisms. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about some of the best new music, live and recorded, that's come out or coming out in the weeks to come. We're visiting with Judy Mills, owner of the Mills Record Company in Westport, and KCUR contributor Bill Brownlee. Our next recommendation you both had on your list, but Judy, you're going to tell us about Chris Hazleton, who has an album coming out this month. He's obviously has the respect of both of you guys.
Well, he could be called the house band of the Green Lady Lounge.
Okay, yeah.
Although that's very, that's not, that doesn't even do the band justice. They're a great band. Chris Hazleton's a very hard worker. This is coming out on his record label, Sunflower Soul, and which he also promotes other local bands, and great bands. And this is a record. I advise you guys to get the first, there's 200 of them. There's going to be, and I don't even have access to this, but I'm just, because this is going to be a classic, iconic Kansas City band that 20 years from now, when someone finds it in your collection, they're like, oh my gosh, they only made 200 of this. This is Kansas City
kidding.
Jazz.
Yeah.
So I would pick this up, obviously, from the artist, because it's not only, it's going to be a piece of Kansas City history,
yeah,
but it's also going to be a great record to listen to.
Are they the Kansas City sound right now, Bill, when it comes to jazz in this town, or how would you characterize them?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it that way, but I would say, as Judy suggested, Chris Hazleton's Boogaloo 7 is the sound of Friday night in Kansas City. They have a Friday night residency at Green Lady. Green Lady is not a big club, but you can't move on a Friday night when this band is playing. It's so crowded for good reason. And not to step on Judy's toes here, but the release party for the record we're about to hear is at the sister club of Green Lady, the Black Dolphin. Just next door on July 22nd.
Okay. And this album is what again?
It is called The Basement Beat.
This is Chris Hazleton.
That's Chris Hazleton and the Boogaloo Seven, right?
Yes.
Meaning seven members.
Yes.
What does Chris play?
The Hammond organ.
That's him on the organ
yes.
there then.
Yes.
You're hearing a little bit of organ come back in jazz these days, aren't you, Bill?
Yeah. Boogaloo sound, you know, there's a piece on NPR this morning about the songs of the summer, and my song would be of the summer. On a national level is Cardi B's new song called I Like It, and it's based on a Boogaloo sample from the 1960s. So, you know, we've got Boogaloo organ and the top 40.
What does Boogaloo mean?
It's a music that was derived in New York City that combines soul and the music of Puerto Rico. So it's salsa and soul mixed together with some jazz. So it's
everything's mixed together these days. Nothing's pure anymore out there, right?
It's a postmodern world.
It's better that way.
Yeah. This reminds our producer Danny Alexander of Grazing in the Grass.
For
that
sure,
right?
Yeah. Himasakela.
Yeah.
It's got that same upbeat international vibe. I agree.
Well, Bill, let's talk about another instrumentalist that I'm really high on as well. He's a Kansas City guy. I love his music. I thought he stole the show at the ill-fated Kansas City Jazz Fest last summer that was so expensive the city couldn't afford it. We're talking about a guy named Logan Richardson.
Yes. In my opinion, Logan Richardson is the most important jazz musician to emerge from Kansas City in the last 20 years. The date you're referring to was his only show in Kansas City in 2017. And a couple days ago, what is likely to be his only show in Kansas City in 2018 was announced. He is the headliner of this year's Prairie Village Jazz Festival.
Oh, you're kidding me.
It's a little bit shocking.
Yeah, it is. He's a little out there for the Prairie Village Jazz Fest, right?
Yes, he is. He has a new album called Blues People, and it is, as we're about to hear, based not only on his saxophone, but on electric guitars. It's a mix of metal and jazz.
He's so important. Why?
He's bringing new concepts to the music. No one else has the same ideas. No one else uses the same structures. Logan is pushing the music into new directions. He's a true innovator.
Let's listen to Logan Richardson. This track is The Settlement. That's Logan Richardson, a Kansas City native. His track there, The Settlement. He'll be the headliner, Bill Brownlee just told us, at this year's Prairie Village Jazz Fest, which is, the first or second weekend in September,
I think. It is Saturday, right? September 8th.
Yeah, for jazz aficionados, he's someone you want to go see. How respected is he by the jazz community in this community right now?
Boy, that's a loaded question.
but he's
internationally, he is considered one of the most important voices under the age of 50.
Yeah. Okay. Judy, let's go to one more here, a group called Bummer. Tell us about them.
They are a noise band from Olathe. And
a noise band.
A noise band.
I never heard of a label like that before. Yeah.
And
how do they feel about being called a noise band?
Oh, they're fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, and because it is definitely, I mean, they.
So this is going to be noisy.
Our
listeners should be forewarned.
It's going to be loud. Yeah. It's going to be cathartic.
Okay. hope so.
Yeah. And I brought a bunch of bands that you guys should know about, but this is the band I want you to know about.
Okay.
And this is their second full length, and it's on a bigger label, and they were born out of a basement, and now they're opening for national bands, and I love them.
Okay, so we're going to get rowdy here. Okay,
yeah.
This group is called Bummer. That group again is Bummer. You can either thank or curse Judy Mills from the Mills Record Company for bringing that one. What else do you like about them?
They work really hard.
They're working pretty hard at something.
They're working hard, yeah. And while it's loud and you can bang your head in the car and you get this sense of rage out of you, it's also melodic. And you remember the songs, and you remember how the songs go, which I don't think is always true with a lot of heavy bands.
Okay. We're going to leave our review of the summer of music scene right there. I want to thank Judy Mills, again, the owner of the Mills Record Company. You can find her at 4045 Broadway over in Westport. Bill Brownlee also joined us. He's a KCUR contributor. Check out his Plastic Sax blog. It's the best blog that looks at Kansas City jazz. Thank you both for a good conversation. Appreciate
it.
Thanks.
Yesterday in the show, we heard about the slave who ran away from her owners, George and Martha Washington, and how they hunted her down. Hear that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. You can find us on Twitter. We're at kcurupto-date. Follow me at Steve Kraske and follow KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow is the 4th of July, and the up-to-date team is taking the day off. We'll return Thursday for a conversation with our ethics professors. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, Dallas Johnson, and Emily Park. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.